Laura, let's look at the decision in the Lehman defamation trial first, in which Justice Michael Lee found that on the balance of probabilities, Bruce Lehman did rape Brittany Higgins.
I think this is one of those legal judgments for the ages, Philip. Not that I'm a legal expert, but an absolutely fascinating judgment, which really, you know, went through all the various threads of this incredibly complicated story and teased them all out, and they didn't cross-contaminate each other. Just absolutely fascinating. So on the Justice Lee dealt with the central issue of what had happened that night in Minister Linda Reynolds' office, and as you say, found that on the balance of probabilities, that's what happened. He also separated out the question of the claims that there'd been a political cover-up, basically. Now, he wasn't really being asked, if you like, to investigate that, because the action was about Bruce Lehman's reputation and his action against Channel 10 and Lisa Wilkinson. So he only went into that issue to the extent that it reflected on the credibility of Bruce Lehman, but particularly on Brittany Higgins. And he said that, you know, that a lot of what she'd said was supposition and, you know, didn't actually stand the, you know, much scrutiny. So he did that, but he had a great, very clear, nuanced approach to the lies and misrepresentation that he said that Bruce Lehman had made across a range of platforms and issues, with some misrepresentations or unsatisfactory evidence that Brittany Higgins had given, but essentially found that while she may have given some evidence that didn't stand up to scrutiny, in the crucial question of what had happened that night, he basically believed her. And then gave a really scarifying reflection on the actions of Channel 10 and all of this. I mean, while they effectively won the case, he did raise questions about the quality of research they'd done in chasing down the allegations that Brittany Higgins had made about the political process that followed this assault. And said that there was a lot wanting there, and was particularly scathingly critical of one of the Channel 10 lawyers who advised Lisa Wilkinson that she could say various things at the Logie speech, which of course became a subject of great controversy. So it was a really fascinating judgment, which also contained some sort of phrases that will go down through the ages.
I hope
one
you're
about
going
the
to
lion and the hat.
Oh, well, that's my favourite. He has a wonderful way with words. Having escaped the lion's den, Mr. Lehman made the mistake of coming back for his hat.
Yes.
Now, some members of the press haven't exactly covered themselves in glory in their reporting on this case and, of course, on Bondi Junction.
I think there's a lot of questions that come up out of all of this, Philip. I mean, the fact that the wrong person was identified in the Bondi Junction case is just completely beyond comprehension, and that this ran for some time before it was corrected. In the Lehman case, I think there's a whole range of issues here about both reporting of what happened, about, of course, there's the salacious stuff about the way Channel 7 enticed Bruce Lehman to talk to them. But I think we all have to reflect on how these stories emerge and how we report them. And I think particularly on how they become, you know, the subject of, you know, a campaign, or they're portrayed that way. You know, I think Brittany Higgins was particularly belittled by some sections of the media who saw her as just part of a, you know, woke campaign. didn't really address, you know, the centrality of the question of what had happened to her that night. So I think
well, some
there
very
should be
big
a lot of
name columnists should be hiding their heads in shame, but
something tells me they won't.
Something tells me you're right. Let's move on to another attack, and that is Iran sending its drones into Israel. How it's a move which, of course, Australia has roundly condemned, Laura.
Mm-hmm. We have, as have most other people, you know, major Western governments, should I say, not most people. So that was probably a response that you would expect, Philip. You know, when one country sort of sends missiles to another country, that's something that happens. But I think the significant thing in terms of Australian politics that's happened in the last week is the intervention by Penny Wong about the two-state solution in the Middle East.
Well, I can't understand why that's caused such a kerfuffle, given that she was just restating long-term Labor policy.
The whole thing's a little bit strange, isn't it, Philip? On the one hand, you're completely right. That's what she's done. It is Labor Party policy. It shouldn't be controversial, but it is because... Or if it's not controversial, it's certainly a step, you know, towards Labor Party policy when they haven't been prepared to take it until now. And I suppose we come back to the question of whether the government is just remained much too cautious about its approach to all of this, you know, since October 7. And I think it would probably say that it had been at the beginning, that it was concerned about, and it remains concerned about social cohesion. But I think there's a few things here. One of them is that it is Labor policy. Two, there's a range of issues where the government's acted slowly. For example, it quite reasonably said when allegations had been made about the UN Refugee Agency that it would suspend funding. But it took a really long time to change its mind about that, even though what it was waiting for was Israel to basically sign off on whether, you know, this come up with evidence that this had happened, who obviously got an interest in the case. Now, as far as Penny Wong's position is concerned, her language was actually quite... When you actually read the speech, it was really just reflecting on what's happening in the international consensus, which is... that a lot of countries, including the UK, Spain, Ireland, a whole heap of other people, have already made this move, and we've just been very tardy to do it.
Laura, the response or lack of response by the Labor government is really hurting them in the polls now.
Well, I think this is a really interesting thing, Philip. I mean, it's always hard and... sounds bad to sort of talk about some really terrible trauma in terms of domestic politics. But I think it is important that we understand that if you take a position, it does have political ramifications. And as I wrote on the weekend, the government is being told by lots of people in the Labor Party that essentially they're facing a mass desertion of voters, of people... of voters of with Middle Eastern connections, that is, not necessarily just Muslim voters, but Christian Lebanese voters, anybody who's got family and friends in the region who don't feel that their despair at what's happening in Gaza is being properly reflected by anybody in politics on either side. Now, the talk is now that they are organising to run independent candidates. That has pretty large real-world ramifications for the government. But equally, Peter Dutton's great political strategy was that he was going to win back, or was going to win a lot of these outer western suburb seats in Sydney. And you can't see how that's going to happen when he's basically been taking a very hard-line pro-Israeli position. So you've got both major political parties not really seeming to be able to accommodate the fact that hundreds of thousands of Australians, feel that their distress and that the distress of people in Gaza is not being taken sufficiently into account in the political positions of our major political parties.
And that also applies to all sorts of people who just feel great concern for the Palestinians.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, before I let you go, future made in Australia.
Yes, well, we'd hope it would be. So this is a slightly, I've got, in my personal humble opinion, Philip, I find this a little bit odd. Basically, the Prime Minister's given this speech and said he's going to have a piece of legislation. And I think the idea is to make sort of an omnibus sort of declaration of all the things that government wants to do to encourage people to invest here, particularly in clean energy areas, you know. And a lot of these policies are things that already exist, but they want to encapsulate it in one place and make it a bit more coherent. Somebody who's been looking at a lot of these sorts of schemes for 40 years, a lot of it sounds very familiar, unfortunately.
It sounds a bit like an episode of Utopia.
Well, you could say that. I couldn't possibly comment, but certainly a lot of these various ideas. It's not necessarily, Philip, about subsidies, but without doubt, in a rhetorical sense, it's about taking a more assertive position for government, whether you do that via tax breaks or, you know, sort of incentives or you know, what sort of providing sort of coordinating roles for investment. Whatever you're doing, it's saying government is going to take a bigger role in trying to get investment moving in Australia, which is a very virtuous thing, but a lot of people, including the new head of the Productivity Commission, remain a bit sceptical.
Finally, was it a coincidence the speech was made in Queensland?
There aren't all that many things that are a coincidence in politics, Philip, and I think this is certainly not one of them.
Thanks, Laura.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.